May we be reminded here of our highest aspirations and inspired to bring our gifts of love and service to the altar of humanity. May we know once again that we are not isolated beings, but connected in mystery and miracle to this community and to each other. Spirit of my longing heart, help me become a force of history. Like a drop of water, let me merge and mingle in the currents of my particular time and situation, and not hold back, but join what nurtures the earth and soaks the seeds of justice and peace. Let me be the flash point where the light begins to travel at great speed, igniting compassion, that others might see the power of goodness. Let me rush with the winds of change across the desolate plains of greed and selfish desire. Grant me the wisdom to know that the winds of eternal hope blow through my words and deeds. Let me join the sky with its watchful eye and be a witness to life affirmations wherever I see them. Give me the strength to say yes to even the smallest act of mercy. With these powers of earth, of light, of wind, of sky, I will change myself and become a gift of love and power to the story of humankind.
My reading this morning is from the poems of May Sarton, who we like to claim as a Unitarian Universalist. And this poem consists of some excerpts from a longer poem titled Gestalt at 60. For 10 years I have been rooted in these hills, the changing light on landlocked lakes. For 10 years have called a mountain friend, have been nourished by plants, still waters, trees in their season, have fought in this quiet place for myself. I can tell you that first winter I heard the trees groan. I heard the fierce lament as if they were on the rack under the wind. I too have groaned here, wept the wild winter tears. I can tell you that solitude is not all exaltation, inner space where the soul breathes and work can be done. Solitude exposes the nerve, raises up ghosts. The past, never at rest, flows through it. I came here to create a world as strong, renewable, fertile as the world of nature all around me. Learned to clear myself as I have cleared the pasture. Learned to wait. Learned that change is always in the making, inner and outer, if one can be patient. Learned to trust myself. How rich and long the hours become, how brief the years. In this house of gathering, this life about to enter its 7th decade. No one comes to this house who is not changed. I meet no one here who does not change me. It is wonderful to be back in this part of the world. I began my ministry in this district, actually, way back in the early 80s. I was the first minister ever to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Fayetteville, Arkansas. And then I was kind of recruited to All Souls in Tulsa, where when I arrived there, they were celebrating John Wolfe's 25th anniversary in that pulpit. So it was quite another learning experience. It's delightful for me to be back in the Southwest with so many wonderful people. Now, as I stand before you, your interim minister for this year, I have this image of myself as bread. Bread that is part of a sandwich in which your called ministers, past and future, are the filling, the beef or the chicken or the cheese or fish or tofu, along with the veggies and the condiments, all those tasty and nutritious items. And my ministry with you forms the bread or the pita or the tortilla that goes around the filling on the outside. In my capacity as bread, I intend to offer sufficient structure and support for the sandwich of ministry. And at the same time, I encourage you to exercise your culinary creativity as you design the sandwich filling of your choice. That is your next called minister for whom you will begin searching next year. As the bread of your sandwich of ministry, I see myself as a chewy, whole grain, high fiber slice, the kind that is wholesome, low fat, and tasty. Only good carbs, bread that leaves one with a sense of good health and well-being. Bread as the staff of life is an expression that has always puzzled me, but here's a thought for our context. My staff or walking stick can be a pointer by which I indicate to you the direction that you may want to consider next. As the psalmist says, "Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." Hopefully there will be both comfort and challenge. And another good way to think of this bread, the word companion means literally with bread or sharing bread with someone. As I begin this ministry with you, my goal is to share bread with you, to address your needs and hopes as a congregation in transition, to hear your stories, to tell you some of my own, to participate in congregational events, to challenge you to be everything that you can be. I intend to companion you in these early stages of transition and to leave you with a sense of good health, well-being, and energy for the journey ahead. And for the beginning of this journey that we take together, I want to look at the radical practice of hospitality. For what could be better as we undertake a journey than to know that we can count on hospitality along the way? Several years ago, I heard a keynote address at the annual meeting of one of our districts of the Unitarian Universalist Association, and the speaker at that meeting was an elected official in that particular district. He referred to a book titled Radical Hospitality by Daniel Homan and Lonnie Pratt. The speaker told us that opening ourselves to the stranger among us is the essence of hospitality. And then he recounted situations in which he had visited congregations and in his official role and had been consistently ignored and left out. What does it mean, he asked us, to be in the midst of like-minded people with whom we hold common values and still be treated suspiciously as the other? And so I ask you, how will you treat me, a stranger among you? How do you offer me hospitality? How do you offer it to others? And how do I offer it to you? Now, you may be laboring under the impression that hospitality means white tablecloths and having the right set of forks in the right placement on the table and polite chit-chat amongst social peers. And often in congregations I serve, hospitality is a line item in the budget. And it means funding the snacks that we serve after the services. Sometimes the discussion in the hospitality committee becomes quite heated and centers around the quality of snacks and their price. How to balance those two issues? After all, say some committee members, if the hospitality isn't adequate, newcomers won't return, and long-timers will feel cheated. Radical hospitality goes far beyond the tastiness of the snack and its cost. I know you know this because of the warm welcome and hospitality that you have already shown me. My experience over the past month plus with you tells me that you are clearly dedicated to, in this congregation, to making sure that nobody will feel left out and ignored as the district officer had been in congregation after congregation. And I am very grateful for your welcome. Radical hospitality, as Homan and Pratt say in the book by that name, quote, is a spiritual practice, a way of becoming more human, a way of understanding yourself. Hospitality is both the answer to modern alienation and injustice and a path to deeper spirituality. End quote. They say, hospitality is not optional to a well-balanced and healthy life. It meets the most basic needs of the human being to know and to be known. It addresses the core loneliness that we avoid with the bustle and haste of our hectic lives. End quote. To know and to be known. Your entire humanity, they say, your identity itself is wrapped up in your need to connect. The real question is not how dangerous that stranger is. The real question is how dangerous will I become if I don't learn to be more open. End quote. So the matter of being open is at its heart a matter of survival. Never mind how dangerous that stranger appears. How dangerous will I become if I don't open myself enough to practice hospitality? And yet if I do enter hospitality, I will never be the same. In its practice, we make room for one person at a time. We give one chance at a time. And each time we do so, our heart stretches in its ability to receive others. I think of the heart as an infinitely expandable organ, and the quality of our lives depends upon our stretching our hearts little by little by little. But the seeming paradox of hospitality is that when we practice it, we don't expect everyone to be our best friend. The essence of hospitality is receiving the stranger while letting them retain their distance if they wish. We welcome them to be heard and understood, and at the same time, we acknowledge the mystery that is in each of us. And another paradox is that hospitality, like charity, begins at home. And by at home, I mean inside each of us. Welcoming and accepting and being patient with what we find within ourselves is the beginning of hospitality. You heard me read Mae Sarton in her poem. I came here to create a world as strong, renewable, fertile as the world of nature all around me. Learned to clear myself as I have cleared the pasture. Learned to wait. Learned that change is always in the making, inner and outer, if one can be patient. Learned to trust myself. Cultivating hospitality within includes what May Sarton calls learning that change is always in the making, inner and outer, if one can be patient, and learning to trust oneself. This congregation knows right in your deepest core that change has occurred and is presently in the making. When you came to the church and you looked around and you saw your friends, and then you came into the sanctuary and saw me, instead of any former ministers of yours, you knew, and probably some of you felt it like a punch to the solar plexus, that change has happened. It won't go back to being the way it was, because that's what change is. That is the outer change of situation that Sarton refers to. Your previous minister and your ministers before him have all gone on to other endeavors, and I am here to serve you for now. Factually, the situation on the outside has changed, and we cannot reverse those changes. However, the inner changes we can do something about. Psychologist and social critic William Bridges calls inner change transition. It is a process that people go through as they internalize and learn to come to terms with a changed situation. And that is why I am here, to help you to come to terms with what has ended for you, to make necessary intellectual and emotional realignments, and to enter into new beginnings. Now, clearly, you have begun this journey of transition since you experienced the wrenching end of the last ministry here, followed by 8 months of ministerless leadership. Endings can be difficult for many persons, and yet they are essential for life to continue. As poet T.S. Eliot says, "The end is where we start from." Your ending with your previous minister and all of the opportunities that offered then allows the transition that we will have together. And this period of transition gives you perspective that you need for your search for a called minister who will be a good fit for this congregation. To go through continuing transition, however, we need to practice hospitality in ourselves. We need to create a welcoming space inside ourselves where we can patiently deal with our different situation as a congregation, in the changes you are experiencing now. Interior hospitality means that you acknowledge what has ended for this congregation and what is continuing. Here's an example of what I mean by an external change and the internal transition that it calls. And you'll see how transition involves making a welcome space within ourselves. I'm sure that many of you have noticed that I've changed some details of the service. That's an external change. It's a situation. Here's where transition comes in, and here's where interior hospitality enters. I have good reasons for making changes, and I urge you to consider them in the context of transition. For example, I have moved the section of the service where the announcements used to fall to the end of the service, and I have titled it Special Notes. The notes are at the end so that the flow of the beginning of the service with its wonderful music and lighting the chalice is not interrupted. And they are at the end also so that we can remember them more easily. And I've asked members of the Board of Trustees to read the special notes that congregants have provided about the activities that we are meant to remember. It's important for the congregation to have positive opportunities to be face-to-face with their Board of Trustees, and they usually have additional information about the activities that they have told us about. Now, we have made a transition. It is more hospitable to let one another know about events in this way, now in the service and later during the social time. Here is an external change, one that helps us in our transition. And another day, I'll explain about my method of recognizing our guests toward the end of the service, not the beginning. During the past 4 weeks, I have had the privilege of serving you as your interim minister, 2 of those weeks as a volunteer until I went on the staff payroll September 1st. My experience with congregations in transition teaches me that there will inevitably be moments of pure pain for some of you as you adjust to the absence of what you had known, as you adjust to missed opportunities. And you will deal with it each in your own characteristic way. But we can help each other through the crisis of the loss of what you had expected. My wish is that you will gather your courage to move toward acknowledging the pain that was part of this congregation for some time, rather than moving away from it. By moving toward pain and acknowledging it, we find our hearts opening and stretching. We find hospitality within ourselves. But if we close off our hearts and deny them their role in processing the loss, then the pain is one of isolation and alienation. One of the ways that I encourage you to cope with any type of loss and to grow into authentic hospitality is by telling your stories as a congregation. I want to listen to your stories, and I encourage all of us to listen to one another. It is by relating to those memories of your congregation, your accomplishments, that we begin to be in new relationship with one another as minister and congregation. Our stories are what help us heal from loss, and the laughter that can accompany some of those stories is the most healing part of all. And so it is important that we offer supportive listening to one another. We all need ears to hear us. The interim transition team will be part of that process of listening to your stories. My hope is that without too much delay, we'll be able to form small groups that we might even call transition talks, where people will have a chance to reflect on how they are experiencing the congregation and what it will need in order to achieve its goals and dreams. More about that later. But first, you're asking, who is this transition team? Never heard of them before. Well, these are the people who have agreed to work with me on behalf of the congregation to enable you in your work of transition. The board has affirmed them, and I would like any of them who are here to rise as I call their names. They may be at the second service as well. And I'm going to name them in alphabetical order: Nancy Benet, Jim Burson, Michael Kersey, Wendy Kuo, Sharon Moore, Sylvia Pope, and Margaret Roberts. They are the think tank of the interim ministry, the lay experts on the transition process, and my thanks to them for serving in this way. Practicing hospitality is a long-term goal, but one that we can help each other learn. As you proceed through your journey of transition, and I would like to say transformation, you will find that radical hospitality becomes more and more possible for you because you are making space for yourself and others. I hope that you will practice hospitality by letting me in on your reflections about the congregation, the stories, the history, the things you like and not so much, that you'll bring me up to date on everything about this church. If you'll make an appointment with me and come to see me in the office, we can sit down together and have some uninterrupted time. So please consider this an open invitation to come and see me at the office. I am grateful to be with you in this congregation, in this wonderful city, in this terrific district of Unitarian Universalists. And I look forward to a very good ministry together, practicing hospitality this year. So may it be.